What's up, everyone? Welcome to Narrative Calculus, the podcast show where we analyze everything from movies to TV shows, books, musicals, and everything in between. I'm Jonathan, a filmmaker, and this is.
Hi, a wannabe writer.
Yes, and today we're reviewing the long-awaited sequel, 14 Years in the Making. It's the sequel to arguably the greatest film, one of the greatest animated films ever, from one of the greatest
Yeah, I'd
animation
have to
studios
argue that
ever,
pretty hard.
The Incredibles! But we're reviewing the sequel, so I guess The Incredibles 2. Yeah, that was a really dramatic opening to a very disappointing film. Very disappointing. That was supposed to be anticlimactic there. So if you couldn't tell, we're doing The Incredibles 2 today. You want to give your quick thoughts on it, Ty?
Yeah, so summed up this movie for Jonathan, he says it's one of the greatest. For me, I didn't have high expectations going in because, to be honest, I didn't like the first film very much. I thought it was good, but it just wasn't my taste. But this film was a pretty huge disappointment on every level. They failed to hit no, not the major. They didn't manage to hit the bare minimum for everything. It was a total unstructured mess.
That's basically how I feel with some pretty big problems with the themes here and some of the performances, as well as some of the character interactions and development in general is pretty bad. So in
Non-existent, I
case
think,
you
is the word.
okay, well yeah, we'll talk about that. So if you haven't seen The Incredibles 2, we recommend you keep it that way, but it's okay. We'll explain it for you. So basically, it picks up right where the last film left off, and superheroes are still illegal. And after stopping the malicious underminer from destroying the city, the Incredibles are basically given a slap on the wrist, and they can't do any superhero stuff anymore. But guess what? This who conveniently shows up? This super rich guy who just happens to love superheroes, who also just happens to have a major telecommunications company, which
By the
sounds
power
really
of Deus
wacky when I
Ex
say it out
Machina.
loud. When I say it out loud, it sounds so much worse. It's like this guy who he loves superheroes and he likes he has a telecommunications company, and he's like he's a millionaire, and he also knows politicians. It sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like just like. Oh, sounds like fan fiction.
In the movie itself, it doesn't sound too awful, but when you actually say it aloud like that, it does sound
Yeah.
completely ridiculous. It
It pretty much
very
is.
contrived.
So this guy, Winston Dever, has a sister named Evelyn Dever, and they basically go with Elastigirl, Mrs. Incredible, whichever you'd prefer, to try to bring back superheroes and this legalization. And she has to stop this villain called the Screenslaver while Mr. Incredible is stuck at home and yada yada yada. It's basically a bunch of nonsense, the first two acts. It kind of picks up in the third act. There's some fun action, but besides that, disappointing. That's basically all you need to know for the plot. So, why don't we start with the characters? And the real star of the show here is, the Underminer. I mean, it cannot be overstated.
For those who
How
don't
great of
know,
a character he is.
the Underminer is a rand is the random villain that's used purely as a plot device in order to get
No,
Mr.
Ty,
Incredible.
you don't understand. You don't understand. There was so much complexity under the
He
surface.
showed up for
Like,
5 minutes and was like,
so,
"Ah, I am evil."
but yeah, but when you look at the intonations of his voice, it really tells you, like, why he's evil. It's like, it's a, I know it looks like he just wants money and he's just sucking up the money. It's like, oh, that's super one-dimensional. But when you think about it, you can't use money underground. So obviously he has some emotional attachment. So it really goes a lot deeper. It really goes a lot deeper than just wanting money, And the way he had the ratcheting fist movement to Mr. Incredible just shows the kind of genius he's able to come up with to stop just a little guy like himself, stop Mr. Incredible.
He uses this
He was
rocket
incredible
fist thing
for
like a
lack of a better
jackhammer.
word, yeah.
Jonathan, those sound like the words of a prequeler to me.
Oh no. No. It can't be. I think you're right. No. Oh, I'm
You
becoming one
become the
of
thing you swore to destroy.
Okay, jokes aside though. Let's start with Mr. Incredible. Why not, right?
What a complete mess, man. This So, Mr. Incredible, the first act starts out with what seems like a fairly interesting setup. It kind of like it felt like it was going to be like Rocky 2. You have the same kind of story where in the first one he was disillusioned with the fact that he couldn't be a hero, right? So in the second one we have kind of a natural outgrowth of that. His wife gets picked over him and he feels disillusioned over that fact. Like, in order to represent heroes to the world, he can't be allowed to go out and run around because he'd cause too much damage. So that sounds like a pretty interesting plot point, and it could have ended with a nice resolution where he learns to realize to like be happy for his wife's success, right? Or to Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm gonna is it okay if I just stop you right there, because I wanted to talk something about this really quick. Yeah, so I thought that this whole thing with the little jealousy complex he had or whatever was super forced. I mean, well, like when we see the relationship they have in the first film and we see that how much it developed like on the island and the way they left off. Then having this whole thing where it's like, oh, just because I can't have my career, then, I'm gonna be resentful towards my wife makes the relationship seem like 10 times weaker. It kind of feels like all the development that happened between them
Yeah,
in the first film was basically
that's part
thrown
of the
in the
problem.
garbage.
You can tell
So.
that they weren't really intending, they didn't really have a plan going forward from the first Incredibles for how they could develop the story further. That's the feeling that I get from this. So
But
it's a total mess.
continue.
There's no, so what I was saying, you could have had a decent resolution where he learns to accept his problems or whatever, and learns to be happy for his wife, or learns to be honest. Like, one thing that was really interesting to me was this development where he absolutely refuses to be honest with his wife about how he's A, feeling, B, about what's happening in the home. Like, what happens during while his wife's away is he basically completely messes up the being the with without her, he doesn't know really how to be a proper parent. So rather than being honest about that stuff, he tries to hide it. And I thought, okay, well, maybe they'd have some kind of relationship development where they learn to communicate better. So many interesting ways they could have resolved that conflict. There was a decent setup. There was the core of a good story in there. So what do they do with that? Well, about midway through, things start to get kind of weird. He like overnight learns to become a better-ish parent. He slowly gets these random leaps in competence that come out of nowhere without him having resolved any of those problems, like his bitterness towards his wife or anything. Nah, it's left completely buried. Nothing ever happens. It's never touched on at the end of the movie at all.
Yeah, so with what you're talking about, I agree with what you said about his parenting skills kind of coming out of nowhere. But then the one little gem I found in there though is so it kind of is happening that he's not you were talking about he's not willing to be
Well, that
honest,
could
and
have been
that's
the problem
basically
if they had
the
chosen to
problem, right?
develop it in that direction.
Yeah, but to kind of go off that point, what they did do though was like, as soon as he kind of like admitted what was going on, like the one scene with Violet at night when he comes home from going to Edna's house and he kind of like admits that, it kind of works a bit because it contrasts the way that the relationship with his wife wasn't working out because he wasn't like being honest with her, but when he But when that happens with Violet, then it then th that kind of seems like
True,
reason
but
enough,
again,
at least in the story, for him
I
to
thought the honesty thing
kind of
was
level
only
up
a
with his parenting.
symptom of like the inferior. I thought his flaw was that he had some kind of inferiority complex going on, right? And the thing about him not being honest was an outgrowth. It was a symptom. It wasn't the cause, it was a symptom. So for me, it just felt really out of nowhere because they were only solving the surface level problem and not really getting to the core of what was causing him to lie like that. Why was he doing that? Why wasn't he being honest?
I think they kind of imply that it's his pride.
They do, but
I think that's basically what they're saying is because, and they kind of like split it into two, which makes it, if they had just left it to one thing, it would have made it better. But he tells the kids that, oh, I don't want to bother your mother because she's at her job right now and he wants superheroes to be legalized. But then they also imply that it's because of his pride and he doesn't want to tell her that things are going badly. I think it could have worked more if they had picked one, but then those two things are basically fighting for attention, which is a common theme throughout this movie, is that like half-baked themes or characters, really anything, fighting for attention with each other.
I don't know. I think that's a natural outgrowth of whatever inferiority complex self-esteem problem he was having before. Like, if you have some kind of thing where you think you're useless because of this, if he had that thing where he thinks he's useless because of mm-hmm. the fact that he's not out there saving lives and fighting and stuff, then yeah he would want to preserve his pride as much as possible, right? To hold on to his flailing self-esteem. So I actually don't think those two were competing. It was just the complete lack of development that bothered me.
Yeah. So the other thing about Mr. Incredible in general is that he's kind of like, in the first one, I think it's fair to say he was the main character, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I don't know, the switch to Elastigirl, after seeing him being developed so much in the first one and then being thrown to the side, seems, like, really jarring. And, I don't, and the way and that...
Especially because Elastigirl...
Go ahead.
Oh, you go first, you go first.
Okay. So, and the way that she kind of, like, represents what Bob was, you know how she talks about, like, oh, you know, I used to get mad at my husband for listening to the police scanner and stuff like that. You remember that, right? It just so it's just kind of, I don't know, that just that one part kind of hammered home the idea to me that she just, I don't know, her basically doing the same thing as Mr. Incredible just doesn't work nearly as well, for whatever reason. Why do you think that is? Because I can't seem to put my finger on it, but she just doesn't work nearly as well as he did. She just doesn't... I don't know if maybe she's just never established enough or given really any motives besides, give the kids a future, but go ahead.
I think the thing is, with the first movie, Mr. Incredible had a reason for going out and being a hero and wanting mm-hmm. to... do all that, right?
Yeah, relive the glory days.
In this, it feels like she doesn't really have... That was one of my issues with this reason. Like, I could tolerate them being far, far away from each other and not letting, like, letting sparks fly, not letting them work off of each other at close range. I could understand why they were separating the two. But they never developed her in the same way that they even slightly tried to do with Mr. Incredible. Uh-huh. She was basically just, ho-hum, ho-hum, everything's fine. There's nothing like she has a similar problem to Mr. Incredible, where she's like, she doesn't feel like she's suited for the role or whatever. She can't get it right.
Yeah, I think...
No, instead I think that's she acts pretty much competent throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that, I think that's it. Her having any lack of, like, motivation or any problems at all, or, any reason to do what she's doing is, I think, that's it.
It's like, on the one hand, you have a somewhat interesting family drama about one man's self-esteem, mm-hmm. right? And then it cuts to another thing where you have this man's wife who's going out being a superhero and fighting crime, and it's just, and it feels more like a Batman serial comic than it does, than it feels like the rest of the movie.
You think that was like Pixar, I think this was like Pixar putting political views over story in a very heavy-handed way. Do you feel that way?
It's hard to say. I could definitely see I think in this case, it wasn't them trying to cram the themes down our throats that was doing it. It was more just genuinely incompetent storytelling.
Yeah, I guess it.
Well, they could have made the feminist angle. I say feminist in like the 1930s term. I know a bunch of people are gonna say that's not really feminist ideas, but like I'm using, they could have gone that route if they had bothered to develop her character properly, but instead it's just eh.
Well, since we're already talking about Elastigirl, I guess we're on the Elastigirl section. One of the things I wanted to talk about, though, was her relationship with Evelyn, because it was really strange to
Oh my
me
gosh,
the angle
yes.
that they chose to go for, like when she's frozen in the thing and Evelyn's like, "I don't know you," and it's like, "Yeah, because I made you a suit, you trust me," and
You
it
know
like.
what would have been so
It just.
brilliant? You know what would have been great? Instead of having those two early on in the film, what they establish is that the reason this girl is doing this is because her parents died. Because they tried to call up a superhero and the superheroes weren't there because they were illegal, instead of running to a safe room. Well, you know what was a huge missed opportunity? Having those heroes be Mr. Incredible and or Mrs. Elastigirl. So then she like directly blames them for the death of her parents because they never showed up.
That could work, but then it would kind of, I don't think it would work would have worked well with Winston though. I don't
Winston?
think yeah, I don't think if that was the case, I don't think that him being super peachy with the superheroes or any of the plot with him in general would have worked.
Which one was Winston again?
The brother.
Oh, okay, yeah. I don't know, he wasn't a major player anyway, so.
Well, he was a major player in the plot.
Right, but I mean, like, he was only serving a role. You could have given him any personality characteristics or traits that you wanted in order to force him to move the plot forward. So.
I guess you're right. But and the other thing about the relationship though between them is that you can see it from a mile away, can't you? The fact that she's
Yeah.
like the Evelyn is like evil or bitter or resentful in some way. And even like this isn't a good thing because it was supposed to be like a surprise villain, right? But like
Yeah.
it's shown to the audience very clearly, like her intense and her like intent her motives basically, even if they were really dumb, which I thought they were, but we'll get to her in a second. That should have been reserved for an actual main character, not a surprise villain who's supposed to come out of nowhere. It's just funny to me how they do like the exact opposite of what they should have. And then they leave the main characters out to dry, but I don't know, I guess, yeah.
By the way, for those who want more information, I believe, let me double check it here. What's his name? Yeah, Chilifras Productions actually has a video on why Disney's twist villains don't work. And I believe it's a good video, if I'm not mistaken.
Schaefer-less.
Yeah, Chafrillis.
Yeah.
So go ahead and look that up. It analyzes the same. For those who watch like Zootopia and Frozen, right? They have that, oh my gosh, the sheep was the villain all along, the innocent cute sheep, and then oh, the nice prince was actually the villain all along. And it has that exact same feeling here. It's the
It
same sort of
does.
thing, so
Same thing in Zootopia. I felt that a lot. Even if I do like that movie, but I think that's basically everything I have to say about Elastigirl. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, she was just a poor character all around. Really, no motivation, nothing interesting for us to root for.
I thought, okay, so I guess we're kind of on to Evelyn. I thought her motives were really, really dumb. Like, even if everything went according to her plan, then she says that she's trying to prove to everyone that we shouldn't be dependent on superheroes. And I would say, but why does she not want that to happen? But then, and then it just goes to the thing with the dad not going to the safe room, but then not going to the safe room right then, it's just so dumb and it feels so forced because it's like, Who would actually
That
do
feels
that?
less the like the fault of superheroes and more
Yeah,
just general
incompetence.
idiocy, I think is the term.
Yeah, and it's she okay. Yeah, her motives were her
Well,
motives jumped also from like relying on technology to relying on superheroes, and they mixed terribly. It was like she was like it was funny because she was like using technology with the superheroes at the same time, and it I don't know it just kind of strike me
The
as ironic,
weird
but.
it's so random, like, and it's funny too because this film makes this constant anti-consumerist bent, you
Yeah.
know, which I do agree with, actually. I do feel our society in general has become way too consumerist and way too focused on the next product, the next whatever, right? But like, this film is weirdly enough, this film works to tell that message very well because it shows exactly what
Yeah.
happens when you let that mindset go too far. When the company tries to pump out art like it's made in a factory, this is what happens. This is what happens.
And the other thing about
It's a plea for help. It's a cry for help from the
from the
writers, trying
inside.
to tell them we're trapped here. Yeah.
So, and the other thing about her motives is that, usually it would like come across in a theme, like in the first movie, or like with the like we actually saw why Syndrome was the way he was, right? And it made sense to a certain degree that someone with his
Yeah,
kind of personality would react. Yeah, continue.
what I was going to mention earlier was that's it right there, that like even if you don't agree with them, even if you think they're insane, you need to at least have a reasonable understanding of why they believe what they believe.
Yes.
Then you can kind of empathize with them to a certain degree. You can understand where the where
Syndrome.
Sidsnap sit
Syndrome.
syndrome. Yeah, so you can understand where Syndrome is coming from. You can understand what made him into the person he is. Like in this, they spend like 5 minutes establishing her character, and then it's just boom.
That was the main thing, is that it wasn't shown to the audience at all, and so it felt super engineered when it just came out of nowhere. And the thing with the I guess we can just include screensaver, but this her thing made no sense. With like taking a pizza guy and making him the screen slaver. Like what was the point in that? What was she trying to accomplish? Like she had him go on these like little tasks and try to beat Elastigirl, but if you're trying to do something that's gonna impact the society, then maybe choose some sort of different means than physical. You know what I mean? Like for someone with her kind of personality, with her supposed motives, then using like physical means to try to propel her ideas onto society seems really.
Well, they do. I'm not going to say whether or not I agree with you. I do just want to mention that, like, they do kind of justify it by saying that she really doesn't understand how people work at all. Like, and again, they really should have told that, or they should have showed that to us, like, given us an actual example, rather than leaving us to, like, figure it out. But they do mention that she really doesn't. She just doesn't get it, basically.
Still though, it just yeah, it just it didn't feel like a I don't know, with at least the personality she had, it kind of felt like a step down from what she would actually do. It just felt pretty out of character in a really jarring way. At least to me. You want to move on to I think we should do you want to do Dash and Violet, same segment, 'cause
Yeah, you know, they were there.
oh really? I had more than that. I thought that I really liked them in the third act because it was a lot like them in the first Incredibles. So they were developed pretty well in the first Incredibles, I think. It was really satisfying to be able to see these two like kind of like forced to come together, even though they don't get along super well. Super well. Okay, but so having to see them come together and like grow closer on the island and kind of like I don't know, there was a lot that happened between them in the first Incredibles movie, and I think it was developed really well. But this movie kind of degrades their relationship to such a degree where it feels like the first film didn't happen. Now it's like, oh, this 10-year-old kid, so let's just have him do what 10-year-old kid stuff. And like, oh, she's a teenager, so let's do him, have him, have her do what teenagers do. And it felt super two-dimensional. Like there was nothing behind the scenes there. There were just products of their age, and they just yell at each other the whole time until the third act, which was really disappointing after seeing, because I think for a lot of people, Dash and Violet are like the parts with Dash and Violet in the first film are some of their favorite parts, and rightfully so, because I don't know, they had a great relationship in that movie and it was satisfying to see it develop. But now it's just completely trashed, which is just sad.
Yeah, my main problem, like, again, this goes back to what we were talking about the constant, like, they can't figure out what part they want to focus on, right? So they have this weird subplot with Violet, where she's like, her boyfriend or whatever got his memory erased, and so she like gets mad at the dad for being quote unquote insensitive, and it's just like. And then later on, he takes her to like this restaurant
The happy platter,
where
the
the guy
happy
works.
platter.
Yeah, where the guy works, and he and she's like trying to hide her face, and eventually
Because
she
she
runs into the bathroom to be mad.
squirted water out of her nose. You remember that? After
Yeah,
seeing him.
which you'll probably see in the thumbnail of one of the YouTube videos
Yeah,
coming up.
it's like there were two, like, I don't know, little tiny people in her nose who just shot water guns or fire hoses out of her nose. That's basically what it looks like. I mean, it's understandable why she would try to hide her face and run out in that scenario. And it kind of comes back later in this cute little scene where she goes up to him, which is one of the best things I think that happened to Violet. Not one of the best things, because, well, I mean, not counting the third act, but that little part with Tony, where she says, "You don't know me, do you?" And they reintroduce each other, and seeing that they, even after having the memory erased, they still like each other, kind of, I don't know, it kind of speaks to her, I don't know, just her growth as a person, I guess, where it doesn't really matter what happened before, because she's like still the same person she was, if you get what I'm saying. You kind of.
I do. I cared so little about that subplot. It just really bored me to death. It might have been interesting if it got proper development, but again, they were trying to flip between all of these other different subplots. So.
Just during that scene though, I like the part where he says, "Wait, are you the girl with the water?" She's like, "I'm Violet Parr." Like that scene was pretty funny.
Yeah. In context, though, it's just, yeah.
So Winston was there, and his motivations are childlike, as it seems, just like Evelyn
He
tells
was a
us.
total plot device.
His whole personality was, "I love superheroes," which was a little disappointing because I think some cool things could have been done with him. This reminds me, something else I want to talk about with the side characters was even the little ones. Every single side character in the first Incredibles is memorable. There's like the InsureCare boss, and he's memorable. Like if you saw a picture of him, you'd be like, "Oh yeah, he's the guy from the Incredibles," and you'd associate him with that scene. And then there's the other guy, I was like, coincidence? I think not. Everyone knows that guy. And then and then there was one other one. Kari, or however you say your name, from the first Incredibles also was pretty memorable. Even without Jack-Jack Attack, she'd still be pretty memorable. And somehow they were able to do that and make them fan favorites to a degree. In this movie, every single one is super lackluster, not interesting at all, one-dimensional motives and personalities, and it's just really disappointing because the first movie. And they had 14 years to get it right. That'd be like if I had a whole year to complete my math paper and I gave it back to the teacher and I still got a D. That's about that's the level of quality they put into this film. But I guess we work with what we got. That's all I have for the characters. You have anything else?
Yeah, I did want to mention the guy that we were talking about. There was a good opportunity to provide a contrast between his mentality and his sister's mentality, the villain. Like, maybe there could have been a cool scene where he explains that for a while that he did blame them or some like
Yeah,
just
I
like
see what you
she
mean.
did, but he learned to realize that it wasn't their fault and that the world is something like that, right? That could that just like a 2 minute scene where he just monologues for a bit. That could have been a good scene.
Sure.
Pixar, when will you hire us?
We're
Come on.
open for
I'll even do it for free,
we'll do
man.
Inside Out 2. Don't you worry about it. We'll work on Inside Out 2. That'll be a good project. Okay, so I guess we're onto the plot right now.
Yep.
Yeah, so the whole plot of this movie basically revolves around the legalization of superheroes, and it feels, besides the one part with Mr. Incredible, it feels really disconnected the whole time. Like the
Oh, it does. You
because
know, that's something I didn't realize until you brought it up.
yeah, it's like, okay, every once in a while they'll remind you, oh yeah, there's like it's like, oh, they're at a dinner party, right, the superhero thing, forgot about that. Or they'll be in a TV show, it's like, right, the superhero thing. And it's they're trying to like mix this, like, the family drama stuff with the superhero stuff. And I mean it could have worked, but it didn't. I mean, there were some opportunities where they could have meshed that together well, but it's either one of them or the other sidetracked.
You know, it's really bad when they have to like remind you that this is the reason for the conflict and the struggle. You know, like when she when like when he when Mr. Incredible is like, "We can't call up mom because," and then he goes on for like five sentences about why it's really important towards the legalization of superheroes. Just as a reminder to the audience in case they don't forget, you know?
Yeah. The other thing about the plot was like, so the first two acts are extremely dull. Like, basically nothing happens. It's like either there's a couple
Yes.
of, cutesy family filler, and then there's some superhero filler, and then there's some talking, and it doesn't
It's
nothing
all
picks
filler,
up.
though.
Nothing picks up until the third act, which I will admit, the third act gets good. I mean, it's pretty good. I enjoyed the third act.
What there were so much there, I think what you said there, filler, perfectly captures how I felt about so much of it. Like, for example, that raccoon scene with the
Yes, it
baby.
felt like a
It
Pixar
goes on
short.
for like, yeah, it goes on for like 5 minutes. It feels almost completely disconnected from the
Yes.
main story. Like, there had to be a better way to show that the baby there's like a baby that they have, and he's the main character's kid, and he has superpowers and all, and that's cool. And they spend just 5 minutes showing off these superpowers where he tries to laser beam a raccoon, and it's like, I mean, cool. Yeah.
It definitely.
There
Oh, yeah, continue.
had to be a better way to show that he had powers. Come on. Come on.
I wanted to also just to go back to that other thing we were talking about because we're on the plot section, but there's like so much here that's like the fact that this guy who loves superheroes has a telecommunications company, and the fact that his sister is like hates superheroes, and the fact that he's also a super rich millionaire, and it's like there's just so many coincidences. And they even like bring it up, like if you remember the scene with the pool, he's like, four hours ago superheroes weren't like, well, weren't gonna happen, but now we have a chance. And it's like, yeah, they kind of like perfectly set up, like told the audience right there, yeah, this whole plot is ridiculous, and it changed
I
just
feel
like
like
that.
Spider-Man 3. Spider-Man 3 managed to set up a better sequel hook than this movie.
Really? How so? Can you explain that real quick?
Well, in that it had a sequel hook. In that in the second movie, at least they tried to build up Harry Osborn's
Oh,
character
yes.
just a little bit. Like, it was badly done, but at least it was done. Here it's just bam. Plot contrivance coming your way, baby. Only $9.99. Free shipping now if you order.
Yeah. And the way that they kind of like reintroduce the whole, superheroes aren't legal thing after the stuff from the first movie is it's completely thrown out. And like if you remember in the first movie, there's a part where they're in the limo and Rick Dicker, he says like, "You don't have to worry about it. We'll take care of everything." And yeah, the country can't thank you guys enough. And it just feels super lazy now that they just bring that whole thing back after it felt like it was resolved. I mean, to me, I thought, okay, this is over.
Anybody getting some Rocky vibes?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, nah. The Rocky, like in one sense, the Rocky films do the same kind of thing where it is literally just him gaining the confidence to go into a boxing
Oh,
match
yeah.
that he's like each time, but they do it much better with the buildup. Here it's just yeah.
That's just about everything I have to say about the plot. There was just the whole thing was just poorly structured, done badly. It was dumb ideas, unoriginal. Okay, you want to move on to the story?
One thing I did want to mention actually about so the intro,
Oh, with the
narrative
underminer.
calculus, narr the at the very beginning with
Tony.
yes, Tony, narrative calculus OGs will remember the Prince of Egypt, the great Prince of Egypt debate, where me and Jonathan spent about 20 minutes talking about whether or not the intro had to focus on the main character. Right? So I've come to appreciate his viewpoint a little bit more. I think it's still really important, but I'm no longer as much of a fundamentalist as I used to be, right? Yeah, this is an example of why I became a fundamentalist in the first place when it came to these kinds of things. this is starting to drive me back into my into the pure, you have to focus on the main character zone. So they start off with this framing sequence that, has, and so they try to incorporate it back into the main plot. Tony, the guy that Violet was talking, that Violet's boyfriend, right? He has his memory erased after seeing her without her mask. All right, and so the film opens up with him describing his experience to a government agent, Dickers, I think was his name.
Rick Dicker, I think.
So you would expect, like, if they're going to spend so much time in the intro, that they would, make the memory subplot a big deal. Like maybe he would like appear on the ship and like be a vital help to getting saving the day or
Appear
something. Something.
on the ship. Like what's
Oh,
this?
that.
That would have made it even worse. He just this kid appears on the ship filled with political leaders and
No, 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 no,
superheroes for no
no no
reason.
no 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 no
What?
no no as in like no as in like it all inter it no it all intercepts at that finale. Like he gets his memories back or something like that, and he starts to chase after the girl to apologize or something, and he accidentally somehow gets himself involved in the middle. That could have been
Okay, I
interesting,
see what you
maybe a
mean.
little bit contrived, but at least but somewhat interesting, right? Nah, like we said before, the whole memory subplot thing, it's just it amounts to about 5 minutes of footage and it doesn't really go anywhere. So you have this intro with characters that we don't really care about explaining stuff that already happened that could have been shown rather than told to us. It doesn't set the theme at all. It doesn't
Okay,
advance the
yes.
plot forward
I
much.
agree with you, but the one thing I will say in defense of this scene, I know it was done badly, but I do think it was a good I do think it was a good call to if they were going to start from exactly where they left off, I think telling it from a different perspective was a good idea. I would think it would have been good with like kind of separating it from the first one. And kind of showing maybe a little bit more what the normal people think, because that was like one of the parts of the movie is like that, and that was another thing. I'll just talk about that really quick. Is that they talk about the normal people, the everyday people. That's one of the the villain's major themes, but it's never really shown to us at all, like their codependency on
Oh, you know,
superheroes.
there's another example of what they could have done if they had expanded that subplot more, made him a stand-in for what
Yes.
normal people think of the
Yeah.
superhero stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is that could have been used well like that, you know, telling it
If
from that
they had
perspective.
done it that way, it could have been done
Yeah.
really well. I
Yeah, you
agree.
know,
Yeah.
Pixar, hit me up. I'm available. Yeah, I'll be at Pixar. Ty will be at American Girl. We'll have a blast. If you haven't seen our Isabel Slams into the Spotlight episode, be sure to check that out. Well, it's on our you know where to find it. Okay, so I guess we can move on to the tone narrative tropes, and this is one of the biggest problems I had with the film compared to the first one. Well, there was a lot of problems I had, but one of them was it was much too goofy. There was like slapstick jokes all over the place, up as opposed to the first one, which had like a lot of like subtle things in it that kind of like help, like I don't know, the subtlety it had in its delivery was able to advance the plot that they chose and the themes better.
Right.
And
And
here,
instead, in here, they want to prioritize the humor over the
yes.
actual story. Like that scene, like the perfect example is that scene. So they get a new house when they get, when they agree to work for the rich guy to advance superpower causes,
Yep.
right? They get a new house, and once they go there, the little brother, Dash, goes up and starts fiddling with this remote, and all sorts of crazy stuff happens, like the sofa start sinking into a pool and stuff. And it's funny, but it's really not relevant at all. It like holds back. Those 2 minutes could have been spent establishing characters or
Yep.
advancing the plot. Nah.
Yeah, and going back to the Jack-Jack thing too, that's exactly what they did there. It kind of feels like they were, instead of advancing the story or the characters at all, they just wanted to make a whole bunch of material they could put in the trailers. That's kind of what this feels like, is they just wanted a whole bunch of trailer footage that would get the kids in. Which reminds me that before we were talking, before we started the podcast, Ty had said that this movie reminded him of a Blue Sky Animation Studios movie.
It does. Yes.
And because of and this is why it's because they chose to focus on the goofy and the stereotypical things that the teenager or a 10-year-old or you know whoever would feel, instead of actually doing a good job establishing emotional characters, which was, yeah, big departure from the first film, big departure.
Pixar has always been really great at focusing in on these personal, small, intimate
Yeah,
stories,
yep.
right? And
Wall-E.
like, right,
Yep.
right, yeah. And here they just did not play to their strengths at all. They were trying to do so many different things with this film, and they all just smacked up against each other. They were trying to, I think the main dip, like, they were trying so hard. They were trying to make a kids' film
Yep.
as opposed to just a film,
Yep.
which is what most of their other stories are.
That's exactly what they tried, the opposite of what the first one was, though. It worked so well because they didn't dumb down the message or the story for the kids at all. And even though the message and the story aren't, well, I
Like
mean, it's not.
just to compare.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to mention, like, just compare. Like, Wall-E is a very depressing, very emotional story, if you think about it. Like, someone who's completely alone for years of their life, finally finding some shred of happiness, right? Like, this feels like it could be an art, that felt like it could have been an art house film.
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, it won an Oscar, right?
I'm not sure. Probably, probably.
There were a lot of people who thought it was so good, it shouldn't have gotten the best animated feature. It should have been best motion picture,
Eh,
period.
I have a few problems with that film, but
But you get what I'm saying,
yeah.
right? And it is really disappointing to see a studio that was able to accomplish that sink down to this.
Sink down to this.
Illumination Entertainment. I'm gonna take a wild guess here and say that Blue Sky and Illumination Entertainment, like, collaborated to build this film or something and like sent it out under the Pixar name. It's the unholy union between Blue Sky and Illumination.
It's like Minions and Ice Age. And it's like the directors of Minions and Ice Age working on The Incredibles. So you can imagine how well that would work out. So I guess we can go on to the themes. And there was a couple of other things I had to say about it. So everything in this movie that is supposed to be a message to the audience was really undercooked and or unclear. Specifically, the villain. She had this cold dependency thing, but then she had dependency on technology, but then, no, she wanted to do dependence on superheroes, and then Mr. Incredible, they try to push some sort of message about, you know, what we were talking about before, not being jealous of his wife, and everything here was just completely, it wasn't developed. And
they also had that thing about whether you should respect laws,
yes,
even if they're unjust.
That,
like, mm-hmm. they make it sound like it's going to be a big deal and that it's never brought up again, ever.
Yes, that reminds me of Civil War too, because that's like exactly what Civil War was like. Basically, Captain America and Iron Man being like, "Well, you know, you sir, what was that? What?"
You gonna try to talk bad about one of my favorite Marvel films, buddy? Buster?
What? No, I'm just saying it's the same thing that happened in Civil War.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna criticize Civil War.
No, I was just saying that it's like the same thing that happened. So, you know, the politicians come in and they're like, "Oh, the laws are bad, and if they send us to do like a bad thing," and it's kind of the same thing. And not necessarily in conception, but more so in its delivery. It felt similar to Civil War, but that just felt flat on its face and wasn't picked up again, which felt kind of lazy, just like this whole film. But why don't you just go on to the script and acting. I had a couple things here. Elastigirl's new voice is really jarring. Do you notice that? Her voice now has...
I haven't watched the first in ages, so I actually...
Well, if you get a chance to sometime, you see it back to back with this film, and you'll see that her voice has... It has not aged too well. It hasn't aged too well. She sounds very different than when she did in the first film. The same thing for Mr. Incredible. His voice seems to have, like, gone since the first film. Like, it kind of feels like he's speaking in, like, just like a, like, not a hiss, but, like, he's running out of air or something. Like,
is pretty tired, like, by the time for most of the film, isn't he? Like, half dead on his feet?
Not necessarily in the first part.
That's true. I mean, like, he does have that whole stress about where are they going to live and eat and how are they going to find a job. I don't know. Throughout the whole film, he's under a lot of stress.
It doesn't feel like that, though. It just... Because even when he's under stress in the first film, he'll, like... I mean, you can just see that there's a pretty big difference, him under stress in this film and this first film. Just, I don't know, maybe you just haven't watched in a while, but I think if you go back to it, you'll see more of what I mean. Another thing that I thought was pretty bad was the dialogue. There were so many interactions in here that just felt so awkward. Like, I was saying before the podcast, the dialogue seems to have been written like an alien came down, analyzed a family for a month, and regular people, and then wrote a script and wrote the dialogue based on what he saw. It seems like a description of what people talk like, and not really what people talk like.
Jackie Sanchez, our favorite ballet dancer,
Mr. Incredible,
the one who starred in the Nutcracker,
Mr. Incredible, our favorite superhero, the one who got kicked out of the movie. Yeah.
Go ahead and check out Isabel slams into the spotlight, causing $13,000 in damages, if you haven't already.
So music was actually...
I did...
Yeah.
Well, one thing that really bothered me about the music, I know that it's the incredible style, so... But, personally, I really didn't understand why they went with the kind of jazzy James Bond stuff, when that really doesn't fit the style of movie that they're going with at all.
It fit the style of the first one.
I guess in this film, just because it was... This film was just that bad, it was like...
Like, I agree, it doesn't...
They were... Actually, with the first one, it was distinctive enough from most superhero films that they could get away with it. But here, they were just trying to do a generic superhero film, and since they didn't do generic superhero music, it felt off. I think that's my problem with it.
I thought that music on its own, though, was pretty good, at least in the beginning, when they did that, you know, when the Disney logo and the castle comes up. I like that little scene there with the piano soundtrack thing. Again, with the tone, the visuals are too vibrant and cartoony and do not fit the story that the world that the Incredibles are in really at all. Like, the color palette...
Is it any different from the first?
No. Look at the first movie and this one. This is completely different. Like, so the color palette can be a big factor in the feel of a movie. And it really threw away, like, the adult mature coloring that would indicate anything more than just a kid's movie, which was one of the things that the first one did right. Like, I don't know, if you just look it up for a second, just look up a frame from The Incredibles whenever you get a chance. Just like, I'll just do it right now.
Yeah, the first thing that pops up when I look up Incredibles 1 versus 2 is graphics comparison.
I don't know, I guess you just have to watch it, but if you do see it, I think there is a very big visual style. There's a lot of visual differences that don't work well for this movie.
Yeah, I can see.
Yeah. And the other thing was the character design was so wacky. The people looked... Did you notice that? Like, especially the news reporter guy. He looks so odd. Like, and the designs of the superhero people, it's like, it just hammered home the cartoony thing. And definitely not in a good way. But you didn't notice the character design of the people? Everyone looked super off. They looked like they were made out of, like, plasticky rubber.
I don't know. If I pretend that it's Ice Age, I can get through pretty much any animated film.
If I pretend that it's Ice Age.
If I can survive that film, I can survive anything, man.
Okay. Good point. That's you want to move on to the quick thoughts then? Why don't you go first?
Quick thoughts?
Yep.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, just, there's not much. There was just a lot of missed opportunities in this film.
So I had a couple things. At one point, there's this, like, 25-year-old guy who yells out as Elastigirl's on her motorcycle, "Marry me, Elastigirl," which was super, super weird, and I wish they hadn't put that in the movie, because
it's... Best scene in the movie!
It's
best scene in the movie,
it's terrible. It's terrible. I did like some parts of the
simp my brother in arms. My simp brother in arms.
Wait, what?
Not that I simp for Elastigirl specifically.
What?
No, I don't simp for Elastigirl.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean in the sense that I am a simp and like seeing my fellow simp, I can appreciate the emotion.
Turn off the podcast now. You don't want to listen to anything else. I'm sorry, I did this. I'll stop immediately. I delete the channel. I'll do anything you want me to. I'm sorry. I'm not associated with him and I'm not the unspoken word that I will not say. Okay. Now that's aside. I'm not one.
Did I say simp? I meant shrimp.
Yeah,
shrimp.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense, because they probably serve shrimp at Tony's restaurant, right? Right? Okay. So I thought it was funny. I thought it was funny how, like, Mr. Incredible had no idea he was making Violet mad, but Dash knew the whole time. And he was like, it was just funny because basically him and Mr. Incredible were doing like the same exact thing, but Mr. Incredible had no clue that it was making her super mad, but Dash did. And the fact that he just keeps going, that was just pretty funny to me.
Yeah.
Just two other little things. There was this part where they kind of like hold the baby up and they make it shoot lasers out of its eyes, which is kind of funny to think about just out loud. But when they do that, they're like pew 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 pew. It's just kind of funny. That reminded me of the Lego Batman movie. Do you remember how they would have like they had like the guns and they would be like pew 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 pew. You remember that?
Yeah, not quite the. I wouldn't say those two are very close at all.
I don't know. It reminded me of that, and I thought it was just kind of funny that they did that. The Mozart thing.
All the Lego movie. Oh,
Oh,
sorry.
what'd you say about the Lego movie?
Well, it's just that all the Lego movies are so hyper stylized that they can get
Yeah.
away with pretty much anything. So
Yeah.
that was.
The Mozart thing in this movie, if you've seen the Jack Jack Attack short film by Pixar, is a pretty funny reference. If you get it. And I thought it was another cool little callback how Elastigirl's new suit ripped because Edna didn't design it, which I thought was, I don't know, I thought that was just kind of cute little thing if you got that. And
Yeah.
at the end of the movie, you'll see that when they go to the movie theater, there's some movie playing called A113.
You know, I was confused by that. I noticed that and I was
Do you
like,
get that?
what is that, like a seat number? No, I didn't understand
Okay,
that.
so the Pixar movies have that in almost every movie. And what it is it's this at least I from what I remember, there's this classroom at CalArts, which is the school that a lot of the Pixar animation people have gone to, like Brad Bird and John Lasseter, a lot of those guys. And one of the rooms that one of their main classes was in was the room number was A113. And so a lot of those guys who now work at Pixar, they include A113 in a lot of the films. And that was a cool place to have the reference. And I thought that was pretty cool. I always enjoy trying to find
I'm gonna be honest. When I saw that, I thought it was like, you know, like a flight number, like, you know, flight 797 or whatever it is, and like they were about to go watch some horrifically tragic, you know, plane crash
Really?
film, you know,
From what
like. You
I was thinking was like I thought A113 would be like more of like a spaceship aliens kind of movie.
Yeah, no, I thought it was one of those airplane disaster movies. Like the ones about 9/11 and stuff. And I was like, why are they watching this? Like, that's not what you take your date out to go watch unless they really like disaster movies.
Yeah, so that was just a little reference to the, Pixar animation, the school most of them went to, which, I always like to find it in different films. But I guess that brings us to our final opinion and summary. I'll start. Okay, your turn.
I'd say personally, after having endured the hardships that were Love Finds You and Charm and Isabelle Slams into the Spotlight,
Yep.
this comes off as more. I didn't really enjoy it, but I wasn't horrified by it either. And the action scenes were fairly well made, you know. None of the shaky camera nonsense that
Yep.
most live action American films are prone to, which is one of the reasons why I really don't like the action scenes of those. So, you know, I guess if you're watching it for the action scenes, then they're okay. But personally, I think it all evens out for me, so roughly about 5 out of 10. I was pretty ambivalent towards the whole, not ambivalent. Is it ambivalent? Let me check. Hold on, dictionary.com. Exhibiting or feeling ambivalence. Wow, how useful. Eh? Simultaneous and contradictory attitudes or feelings, such as attraction and repulsion. Okay, so it's not ambivalence. Okay, never mind. I just felt kinda eh about the whole thing. That's how I felt. Just eh, kinda disappointed, because it's Pixar and they're known for putting out pretty darn good movies, but it all evens out.
That says to me, we need to review a really good movie soon so you can kind of clean your palate to really know what a really bad movie is.
And it's
Oh,
like, it's a
that
pretty.
reminds me. I just wanted to outline that. So this is the first Pixar movie, I think, to include swear words.
Really? Oh,
I'm pretty
yes,
sure.
I
Yeah.
remember.
Yeah, and what just strikes me as so symbolic was that this movie tried let's so the first one didn't have any at all, but it was able to be a shockingly adult themed but extremely good and oh completely acceptable for all ages and just a really great movie. And this one thought that including swear words would like up the adult factor, but it didn't. It fell on
It
its
made it feel
face.
childish, if more than anything
Yeah.
else.
I don't know. That's just something interesting to highlight.
Specifically, the line that stuck out to me most with profanity. I will give them this. The line that when they decided to jump the shark, they jumped the shark hard, man. There's just this great scene where he finally erupts after days and days of pain, and he gives this crazy hard speech, and he says, "Baby, you know what I do? I eat lightning and CRAP thunder. You know what I am, Mr. Incredible. I roll with the punches." And he's like, he's getting some of that Rocky spirit in him, I guess.
It got
That's what.
it was worse than that actually, but at other parts. But so, what would you rate this movie at 1 out of 10?
5 out of 10. I really, objectively speaking, I don't think it did anything horribly, but I don't think it did anything really well, and it missed a lot of great opportunities.
I think that this movie compared to the first one was so disappointing that it just fails in every way, but I do have to give it credit where it's due. The third act was pretty decent, and there were a few little gems here and there that I tried my best to take out of this film. It was hard, but I did a little bit. So well, I'll get so I'll have to give this film a 5 out of 10. Wait, what did you rate it again? I just forgot.
5 out of 10 as
Oh,
well.
okay. So I guess together, the narrative calculus gives Incredibles 2 a 5 out of 10. And unfortunately, we've been forgetting to do our signature Bible reading at the end. So, well,
Signature,
yeah,
we did it like
signature.
once, two
It's supposed
episodes.
to be
How did that
signature.
become a
That's the
signature?
idea. That's the idea. So we're going to continue today. We're going to be reading Hebrews 6, The Peril of Not Progressing. Therefore, leaving the discussion of the elementary principles of Christ, let us go on to perfection. Not laying again the foundation of repentance from dead works in a faith toward God, of the doctrine of baptisms, of laying on of hands, of resurrection of the dead, and of eternal judgment. And this we will do if God permits. For it is impossible for those who were once enlightened and have tasted the heavenly gift, and have been partakers of the Holy Spirit, and have tasted the good word of God and the power of the ages to come, if they fall away, to renew them again to repentance. Since they crucify again for themselves the Son of God and put him to an open shame. For the earth which drinks in the rain that often comes upon it and bears herbs useful for those by whom it is cultivated and receive blessings from God, but if it bears thorns and briars, it is rejected and near to being cursed, whose end is to be burned. But beloved, we are confident of better things concerning you. Yes, things that accompany salvation, though we speak in this manner. For God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown toward his name, in that you have ministered to the saints and do minister. And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end, that you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. For when God made a promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, surely blessing, I will bless you, and multiplying, I will multiply you. And so, after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. For men indeed swear by the greater, and an oath for confirmation is for them, and an end of all dispute. Thus God, determining to show more abundantly to the heirs of promise the immutability of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath, that by two immutable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, in which enters the presence behind the veil, where the forerunner has entered for us, even Jesus, having become high priest forever, according to the order of
Melchizedek.
Melchizedek.
Isn't that just nectar to your ears?
Yep. If you enjoyed this episode of Narrative Calculus, don't forget to subscribe. If you enjoyed this episode of Narrative Calculus, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to leave us a 5-star review down below and tell your friends to subscribe. We're also right now available on YouTube, so be sure to check us out there. We have shorts from all the new episodes coming out, and we're going to have some original content coming out there soon. It's going to be really exciting, so you won't want to miss out on that. We're also available...
Specifically, we're going to be working on some much better scripted videos that are going
video
to have
essays.
Some clean editing. They're going to be solid essays. Check them out, guys. Be subscribed.
We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And be sure to check out some of our other episodes, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye, everyone.
Peace.